Hello, and this is Saving Tomorrow's Planet, the podcast that goes around the world finding people taking action to save the planet. And this is Jeremy Schwartz. Well, today we have a treat for you. We're going to Guatemala, to the rainforest, to the Maya temple area, and speaking to an incredibly inspiring gentleman called Sal Blanco Sosa, who is doing great things to ensure that our touristic travel is respectful and not further damaging this so precious planet. And without further ado, let's go over and speak to him now.
The last 30 years of my life in the northern part of Guatemala, in a place called Petén, which is where the famous Maya city of Tikal is located, which is one of the most important Mayan cities from the classic period of the Maya. And also, we have here the second largest biosphere reserve of tropical rainforest north of the Amazons, which is called Maya Biosphere Reserve. So it's a very tropical place where I live. Guatemala is not, but where I live is very hot weather. And I've been working in the travel sector since 1994 in different things, but most of my time since 1999 related to developing the concept of tourism certification for hotels, for companies, although I've done some work in community tourism, advisory, coaching, and many of these training throughout these last 20 plus years on these matters.
Well, we're going to dig into this because it's a fascinating conversation. And, you know, you don't necessarily know this, but I'm absolutely passionate about the rainforest, about biodiversity, about how about 50% of all the animals, plants are in 0.2% of the landmass of the world. So, and I come to South America and different places to see these forests. So it may well be that I come to you because I haven't been to Guatemala yet. And what you've already said, I'm fascinated by the Mayan history. And there's some very interesting conversations about the cultures that led to these incredible places. And so there's lots to discover and learn. But what we do want to talk about is this question of ecotourism, let's call it that, or the preservation of precious areas when we do also have tourists, clearly. Perhaps the first thing is just how did you become passionate about this subject? What was the thing that sparked it for you? But by the way, I'm just going to tell all the listeners, you don't look 40, so you look much younger than that. So nonetheless, tell us how it
thank
is
you.
In your passion.
This is such a great start. Now I'm 46, so thank you for that.
Oh, well, you're even doing better then.
All right. Thank you for that. No, I'm kidding. Listen, every time I get asked this question of how I got engaged with the sustainable travel world, I think about it because I would really like to say that I have a great story of how one day I had this epiphany and then I became hooked into this, but I really don't. It just happened. I was actually very young, living in this region. I was still looking my way through life. I think we are all at some point and just figuring out. And I got this opportunity from a tour operator that wanted to have this roster of potential tour guides for nature-based activities and archaeological activities. And I was invited. I got into the process. I started training. I was still very young, 18 years old. Became a tour guide, mainly at the Tikal National Park. And so I was every single day walking people through trails, telling them about the story, the history of the Maya city, what we know, of course, some bits about our culture, but also, and Tikal is impossible to miss in that case, talking about the nature surrounding us, which is pristine, virgin forest, tropical forest. I became very hooked into the importance of preserving that, the mix of all of that, which was not only the natural part of it, the biodiversity that lives within it, the greatness of it, but also the great culture behind it, a culture that we still have today. Guatemala, I don't know if you know, but Guatemala is the third country in Latin America with more indigenous communities, just after Peru and Bolivia. So, yeah.
To interrupt you for a second, I'm very personally passionate about the subject of indigenous people, because they are the peoples that were there in multiple countries around the world before colonization. They have a reputation for protecting the land and being, you know, believe in preserving it for generations. So I am actually very interested, and that was one of the questions. Perhaps we'll come on to that in a second. So I didn't want to interrupt you, but just to make you aware that this is a great interest of mine. So carry on.
Amazing. Please. Initially, I must say that I became very interested in learning more about our culture, learning more about the richness and the diversity of our culture in a country like this, where we have 24 languages, communities that live all together, not always getting along as well as we would like to, because that's unfortunately the truth. But I really see the richness in that. And I would say that if there was a moment when I became hooked into sustainable travel, was when I came to realize that sustainable travel was all about combining best way possible all of these elements to teach the world about the diversity of what we have in different countries. Just to give you an example of what I'm trying to say, because every single day I walk at that time with tourists coming from different parts of the world, from the US, from Europe, from Asia, and explaining them about our culture. And I could see how people were really, truly interested most of the times in this. So then I realized it was a duty to actually be a good ambassador and share with this with people. But the moment when I really felt arrowed by this is when I realized how travel can really transform the way we understand society, the way we understand our world worldwide, how we can really transform people. I would say that after the educational sector, the formal educational sector, travel is probably the one sector that can really touch people's minds and change the way they process stuff around them. So great tool for building a better society.
So I totally agree with you. And I suppose, therefore, you are at the cutting edge of a paradox, if I can use that word, which is that at one element, we can see that travel is a great educator. And at the other, potentially travel is creating problems to sensitive areas, which I guess is where you've come to try and reconcile that we can embrace travel, but that we have to do it in a way that doesn't in itself exacerbate the very problems. And we probably can see that it does, because aeroplanes and big cruise ships and so on do. But putting that aside, yes, I didn't necessarily want to interrupt, but I wanted just to say there is a challenge for us here, isn't there? And you're at the edge. So tell us more, yes, because I like to hear.
No, I guess in building on what you just said, actually, the reason why I then engage into this, and I have dedicated practically the rest of my professional life as of today, almost 29 years in the travel sector, is because of exactly what you just said. The realization that tourism is a great opportunity for development, but it's also an unfortunate tool for destroying communities, destroying, misusing cultural heritage, impacting negatively the lives of locals in so many ways. The question here is, can we stop tourism at all? In my opinion, we can't. We cannot stop people from traveling around, from looking around, from exploring, from wondering. If someone thinks we can stop tourism from reaching somewhere or another, good luck with that. I don't think it's going to happen. So since that's not going to happen, let's not put our effort in that. And let's try to put our effort in how we can make this engage, these interactions, meaningful interactions for both locals first and then for visitors alike. And that's I think, the challenge that we've been trying to tackle throughout all of these years, and I've been trying to tackle throughout all of these years via the work I do and having the opportunity to work for various organizations with this type of mindset has given me the opportunity to put my best effort into trying to do this, although I do recognize there's so much to do still. So, yeah.
So let's pull out some really good examples. I mean, I appreciate from studying you that auditing, and I've done auditing a lot, is a powerful way of evaluating in detail the status of something and then giving accreditation or something. So I think it'd be interesting to hear about that. But I would also be interested to hear where, as either a result of auditing or your work or understanding, people have done something different in the way they execute, you know, their hotels or whatever. So it's not just another concrete block. dropped onto a beautiful beach, and all the land is turned into, all the water perhaps is taken. So yeah, let's start with the auditing as a tool.
I like the auditing concept, which is, by the way, not the only approach, but I like the auditing concept because the auditing gives formality to the approach.
Yeah.
One thing that I see a lot of value in is, especially with, of course, independent auditing, is that it can objectively tell you where you stand regarding a process that the companies and organizations should understand, not as an end, but as actually a mean towards a journey, I would say a never-ending journey, which is ultimately what sustainability is. So auditing gives formality and frames the process. It gives rigor to the implementation of something. Auditing shouldn't be looked at, and this is something we tell organizations we work with for years, shouldn't be looked at as something where you pass or you fail simply. It should be looked at something that adds value to your journey from an outside perspective. Of course, it gives you a score. It tells you you're still, there's 25 cents that you're still missing for the dollar. Yeah, that's there. You know, it gives you this type of insights where you realize there are things that you thought you were doing well, but you probably are not too much, or that you could improve. And it has this kind of exchange. But the auditing part gives you this opportunity to frame your efforts, to provide, to organize the feedback, to organize your plans towards improvement, and so on. Auditing is linked to certification, and in many cases, companies, I have heard this a lot of times, some companies say, we don't like auditing because auditing is part of a process that is basically box ticking. So we don't like that because box ticking is to just comply with a requirement and that's it. You're done. This is so untrue. Yes, there's box ticking. Yes, there's a moment when you say, yes, you are in conformity against the criteria. But criteria are designed in a way that in most programs, you are able to build on that as much as you want. Not having it at all is what I don't like, because then you have a lot of these people saying that they're doing a lot of great stuff, but who can confirm that?
Right.
And I'm very suspicious of those kind of things. I prefer those who actually take this type of approach. And to me, it also shows commitment, because you're not afraid of being in the spotlight for a minute and being questioned about your practices. And that's I think is reliable.
So I'd like to have some examples so that we can picture what a sustainable, let's say, hotel, as you mentioned, who's on this journey and moving forward might be doing. Just a couple of examples of, you know, they've done the audit, but they've moved forward to the next level. And then, you know, what does an unsustainable hotel look like, you know, a little bit? Just a couple of examples with each, just so we picture a bit more the extreme of, you know, what's out there when you're doing this.
When it comes to saying what's good versus what's not, I guess it's all relative and it's all related to the maturity of your journey. We're all in this process, and I know small companies, startups that are just figuring out their way through their business, and probably initially they're not doing some things right, not because they're bad people, not because they are irresponsible, just because they don't know better or they can't. So I've seen many things happening in my 20 plus years auditing companies all over Latin America, especially. I've been working in almost every single country in the Americas and the Caribbean and seeing this type of development. So what I can tell you is a responsible hotel to begin with is one that commits to long-term processes. This is probably for me the most relevant takeaway. When I have seen, and you probably have, and all people listening to us have seen, all of these hotels where you see the towel reuse program, the linen reuse program, the cards on the table, leave it on the bed if you want this to be changed or not, or turn off the light, and a lot of practices that have become kind of like standard practices, but that really don't tell you if a company is committed or not. In some cases, this is happening because there's no other way these things could happen anyway. This is happening because it became standard. It's not because you're responsible. So for me, the first indicator is commitment. And I will add a word, public commitment. When a company is willing to tell out publicly, this is what we are committed to do and to pursue. And this is our goals in terms of our environmental impacts, our social impacts, our cultural impacts. This is how we want to improve our business in a way that it benefits us because it's a business after all, but it also benefits our surrounding stakeholders and those who we are engaged with. And when a company is willing to also report on that periodically and say, here's where we are, this is what we're still missing, we're working on this, and be transparent on where they are not there yet, but also celebrating on their achievements. To me, that's the first clear element of a truly responsible company versus one that is not.
Good. And I want to talk to you about this because one of the things that's starting to appear is that some companies, I don't mean hotel companies, but others, you know, have decided they've become fearful about putting out in the public domain goals which they're not sure if they could meet because they are so obsessed for good reason that they never share with the financial community a goal that can't be met because then they will be challenged, even the CEO could be fired, that they, you know, there's a moment now of extreme caution. What would you advise to a company to say, you know, be bold? The fact that you're setting out a goal which you're not sure if you can get will be accepted by external stakeholders. What have you seen around that thought?
If I were to advise someone in that regard, I would say, be honest. Tell the audience where you are. And believe me, the real people, the people that matters out there, will, that matters to you, of course, will understand your situation because this is not just you. The world is not sustainable, Jeremy.
Yeah.
We want the world to be sustainable. But the truth is, that if you tell someone today in Guatemala, please stop using disposables, it's impossible in most communities to stop using disposables. So maybe they want, yes, maybe they want. And if you tell anybody, would you like to be more responsible in terms of your impact? Would you like to put your trash somewhere different? Would you like to have recycling in your community? Everyone will say yes, because we all say yes to those kind of things. But is it truly possible in your surrounding? Is it truly possible in where you are? So start sharing honestly where you are, but don't share it from the perspective of this is where we're falling short and bummer, right? We cannot do more about it. No, share it from the perspective of this is what we're falling short and this is why we think we're falling short. And if it is something that is out of your hand, start placing the discussion publicly so that it becomes a topic. Because that when it becomes a topic, when we start acknowledging the elephant in the room is when we start tackling collectively. Because otherwise we don't. But if we don't talk about the problem, if we don't talk about the challenges, then those things will never be tackled or will be tackled too late down the road.
So I love this. It's you're being giving me lots of wonderful, rich insight. And please don't underestimate the richness of the choice of words you're making. Could you give me an example of where in the sphere that you're working in, you've seen that issue being brought out and then somebody being able to create a discussion about it? Because that would be interesting.
So I do have an example of a small family-owned hotel. I hope no one gets no one gets jealous on what I'm going to say because I've seen great, great stories. And I've been blessed with seeing a lot of great efforts everywhere where I've been so far. But I have this story of a hotel in Argentina, where the first time we audited this hotel, it was about 10 years ago. I remember very well the owner. She's an amazing woman, leading in so many ways, her company and her family taking on from her parents' company. We started discussing one very hurtful topic on the travel sector, which is child sexual exploitation at destinations. And we started saying, unfortunately, this is a thing and it's happening in many destinations. And this destination, not at her hotel, but this destination, we said, because this is a destination close to a triple border line with three countries, Brazil, Paraguay, and Argentina, has unfortunately a lot of that. And I remember she got so angry right away. But angry in a very good way. She said, I really hate that because I really hate the fact that we are being labeled as that as a destination because I was born here and I don't like that and I need to change that. She later on, among other things, became the leader of an initiative for the whole Puerto Iguazu destination community to engage in adopting the principles of a global initiative called the Code, not just for the hotel, but for the whole destination. And she started doing presentations and speeches and talks and webinars with her peers locally at the destination, talking about this issue and talking to people about this situation, doing what I just said to you a few minutes ago, acknowledging the elephant in the room. This is happening, whether you like it or not, and we need to do something about it. So let's start learning about it. Let's start working about it. I would like to say that 10 years later, that problem doesn't exist anymore, but unfortunately, that's not true. However, I do say that among this and other initiatives, this lady led and other local entrepreneurs that are very impactful leaders in that destination, they are now preparing themselves to become the first Argentinian destination to become certified under a program called Biosphere. So they're really, really committed into making sustainability the center of their foundation as a destination. And they've done so not just by telling people nice stories about all the efforts they're doing, but also discussing stuff like this, like hunger, like the fact of hotels being disposing too much food waste. So they created a program to avoid that at the destination. This type of things that are not the nice things of travel and not the things of why you will choose to go to Puerto Iguazu probably, and not neither me, but are things that are impacts from tourism that they are acknowledging and working on. So I guess that is...
Yeah, but there's two aspects of that story I like. It's obviously one, you raised a very shocking thought that was not in my mind, that, you know, obviously they mobilize themselves, but then at the end you've raised a subject which isn't talked about, which is this thing of food waste or the volume of food that tourists consume in a certain place where perhaps the locals don't have food or don't have access. You know, quite often I can be in a place and saying, gosh, how did the food even get here? You know, it's arrived invisibly. You don't see the lorries or whatever, but Looking at the numbers of people, look at the volume. So let's explore that food waste question, because that might be a good example of where you are impacting and where hotels and so on are moving forward and reflecting on it. Is this something that is commonly now discussed and addressed?
I think there's various topics that are more commonly discussed. And this is, to me, I like to repeat this to myself because otherwise I wasted 20 plus years of my life, but I really don't see it that way. But I feel that there's been many gains in terms of putting topics on the table that are discussed. So I just said one very critical topic on child exploitation, that it's not just labor exploitation, food waste discussion. So yes, that's an issue. Let's discuss it. Our initiatives are putting that on the table and are making people to discuss it. So how do we manage this? Sometimes food waste is not necessarily food that is rests of food. It's actually sometimes food in good condition. It's just that it was not used or something. I've seen these projects where companies are doing, this was something I liked that I saw in South America, a social fridge. So at night, everything that did was not sold, but it's there, cooked, ready. It's put on a social fridge that is facing the street. So, and there's this sign that says, pick up whatever you want, but just please pick up just what you need and leave for the rest. And so people, unfortunately, I really would prefer not to have those type of situations. But once again, these are things that are there and we cannot just ignore them. And so there's people who are benefiting from that and picking up some food and taking it away. Otherwise, that would go to waste anyway. Yeah. Alternatives more related to ensuring the size of portions are well prepared so that you don't have this type of disposals. And also the reuse of food waste is also an issue. Another topic that is highly discussed nowadays is supply chains.
Right.
More and more. Where do you get your stuff from? And how impactful is that in terms of your environmental footprint, your social footprint, all of that? It's not just about being environmentally friendly, but also socially responsible. Where are you sourcing from? Who are you sourcing from? Can you, through your sourcing, support some efforts, local efforts, startups? Can you do that? those type of what we're trying to do here is put options in the table for companies to consider this. And everything is linked back to my first statement. They explore this because they are committed to long-term changes. They understood from the very beginning that becoming certified is not just about an audit once a year and getting a certificate. It's about a long-term commitment. And the audit becomes more a process that they use to check the temperature. Yeah. Or like someone told us once a few years ago, this is good because it keeps us on our toes.
Yeah.
We don't relax. So, yeah.
Tell me two things that this has raised. I think one, you know, to be the devil's advocate for a second, because there was a particularly powerful Netflix program, I'm sure you've seen, called Sea Piracy, which was, and I... either rightly or wrongly, I would say it did quite a bit of damage to the reputation of auditing brands, because I think they challenged them. What's your sense of how you are protecting the integrity of of these audit brands, not just ones you're working on, so that, you know, there is trust amongst consumers, and if it's challenged, it doesn't sort of unwind in this way? What's your sense of that question in a generic way, in a big sort of...
Listen, first of all, I think we have built what we've done over the years, and I myself believe in an honest approach in what we do. Certification is a tool, one of many, to support sustainable development. It can be used properly if you are truly committed, if you don't want to just use it to wash your face and show something different out there. We've been trying to build this type of concept from the perspective of this is one of the tools you can use. Is it the only one? No. Is the only thing you need to do? No, never. If you only rely on this, you're lost. Are we able through certification to solve or to tackle every single challenge we have in terms of the sustainability of the world, the climate emergency or the climate crisis or the carbon footprint, et cetera, et cetera? No, we can't. Can we deal with every single social problem through certification? No. If someone said something like that, that would be untrue. So I think being very honest in the fact that we are there to support the overall global efforts, not to solve all the problems,
yeah,
is the first thing that we need to be clear about. Certification was never intended to solve all single problems. Some companies that address certification from a more commercial perspective, unfortunately, misuse these concepts because they take advantage of the consumers not being educated properly about it. So consumers want simplistic approaches. So we are certified, we are sustainable, we're good, and that's it. And lots of people don't ask. But then you have those who do, and those who come with these piracy documentaries and stuff like this, and they undress all of these lies right away. It's quickly to do that. But I feel very confident that so far we have engaged with those that really want to do a good effort.
So the idea, I think what you implicit in what you're saying, what I believe is that together with auditing and together with good work, we need to have innovation, because the problems, as you've been saying, that need to be tackled need solutions, and those solutions may not be here. And therefore, that's where innovation comes in, trying to say, OK, what's a different way of doing things?
Listen, I think we have a lot of homework still. And of course, we will like to think there's going to be something that will change the world rapidly in the next 10 years or so. But there are a lot of challenges that we still have homework to do. For example, we talk about renewables nowadays, and that is still a very big homework for the travel sector, at least. I would say for the world, but I'll focus on the sector that I know. And why is that? Is it because the sector is not interested? I would say no. Is it because the sector is uneducated about renewables and how they could approach them? Yes, that's probably part of it. But mainly it's because it's really not yet that accessible to everybody. It's still too expensive. It's still too far away from SMEs, from small companies that are just figuring out things in their regular business to start discussing about how this works. So we need to work on that still. So
that's
directly related to your question, but I'm saying there are things that were considering innovations 20 years ago that we are still far behind, and that we will need to put ourselves up to date as a sector to work.
Two little questions to finish. Unfortunately, what happens when you have a really interesting person, the time goes incredibly quickly. And It always frustrates me. What I've seen across the world and in business and everywhere is that the ability to understand the full P&L, I'm going to call it that, of an initiative. So, for example, sustainability, let's say it's renewable energy. You know, we focus on the cost, quite rightly, but actually it's not the cost that matters. It's how much money might that either save you or make you. And that's not always so evident in all the discussions, you know, because people aren't. And I've worked in the hotel industry and was really surprised at how the general managers of hotels might say, right, we need to do up a room. It's going to cost this. But they then don't say, but if I do that, that's how much more money I'll make because I can charge more or something, or I'll get more occupancy. So the conversation was like half a conversation required in order to convince somebody with the money to actually invest. How articulate or how often do you hear people in the discussions going past just this will cost more to actually I can see how this will make me more or it'll cut my costs because I'm now being more efficient?
Well, the past couple of years, I would say I haven't seen many because COVID impacted so much in the travel sector that the worries about financial stability are higher than ever in the travel sector. However, I believe that paradoxically, we are talking about sustainability more than ever after the pandemic. And we are seeing companies changing the way they analyze this type of things. I've seen companies discussing the use of renewables, for example, from a long-term perspective, and now engaging more on the climate discussion, which is to me a great gain on this process. Although I have my concerns about it because the travel sector is so good at creating, building stories, right? Storytelling and showing great commercial stuff. So the climate thing becomes a low-hanging fruit for any good commercial team and to build a story around something that is just one bit piece of sustainable performance. But still, it's like something that sounds very heavily in the minds of everybody. But anyway, the good thing is that they are discussing it now. They are acknowledging it. I remember that just 5 years ago, I remember having this conversation with a tour operator saying, why should I track my footprint, my carbon footprint? What's the benefit of doing so? I really don't know why you're asking me that. And now I wouldn't believe there would be such a discussion unless you were a climate change denier. But that's for another podcast, probably.
Yes. Good. Well, look, this has been fantastic. So to finish, if you were to give a message to all the people listening who are probably those tourists going to hotels, I don't know, is there something you'd want to say to people to consider or to do that perhaps they might not have thought about? Bit of a challenging question. So I'm going to give you a few seconds.
I would say, well, as a traveler, just thinking myself as a traveler and as a fellow, and if I were to discuss with you as a fellow traveler or other fellow travelers out there, first thing I would tell you is next time you plan a vacation, please consider to go out of the fast lane. First thing, what I'm trying to say here is take things a bit slower, stay longer at a place. Try to really feel that place, understand that place, not because of the place, because it's going to be the best that you can do as a traveler. Because when you get back, you will have great memories of a place because you really interacted. You really got to know the place. Over the past 30 years, we had this trend of people traveling around the world, trying to do as much as they could in a single trip. So the multi-country or the multi-site trip, it was in order for everybody. I still see a lot of offers out there of people, of companies saying, Europe, 17 days, 10 countries. In the end of that, you don't even know where you've been. It's as blurry as a dream. You don't know where you've been. You don't remember. Was it this cafe? Was it in Brussels or was it in Paris? I really don't remember. Everything looks so similar. So you have just lost your chance of earning for yourself, for your growth, your experience as a traveler. So if I could give you a recommendation, would be take things slow. Try to identify a destination and see as much as you can from that destination. And that will give you a great, great, probably the best experience of your life as a traveler. But it will also lower your carbon footprint. It will also impact a lot on the local community. It will impact a lot on the consumption locally. It will bring a lot of benefits to small entrepreneurs, et cetera, over there. So you'll do all of that great deeds that a sustainable, responsible traveler should do without even thinking about it and enjoying every single day of your time. So that's what I would say.
Well, I love that. What a fantastic finish. This has been an incredibly inspiring and informative conversation, Sal. It's really
thank
fantastic.
Thank you very much, so, Jeremy.
And I thank you for your time.
I have to say that I really enjoy this and I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you for doing this and for having these conversations with people around the world. It's really needed.
Well, I think those were fine words throughout that conversation, but inspiring ones at the end to spend time in a single place when we travel so that we can give to the local community and learn more deeply about the place we've been. Talking about learning more deeply, it would be brilliant if you could subscribe to the podcast and inform your friends and colleagues that this is something worth listening to. I personally learn something fantastic each time I have these conversations, so feel strongly that if I do, I am sure you are too, and your friends and colleagues would as well. This is a practical podcast for practical people, both at work and at home. And I hope that you can benefit from the tips and tricks that we share and the content that we listen to.